640 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. It's been a tough day in Uvalde, Texas, where people are remembering the lives lost 1 year ago today in a mass shooting at Robb Elementary. Reporter Chris Fox is there.
A steady stream have been leaving flowers and saying prayers at makeshift memorials at both Robb Elementary and in the town square. One of those, fourth grade teacher Arnie Reyes. He lost 11 students that day. He survived after 10 surgeries. He was asked how difficult it was to wake up this morning.
My emotions were sad, but then I always remember the good times that I had with them.
Veronica Mata's daughter Tess did not survive, but she continues to be her motivation.
I have a picture of Tess on my nightstand, and you know, I just look at it and I just tell her, give me the strength, baby girl. Help me get up.
Chris Fox for CBS News, Uvalde, Texas. You're simply
the best. Legendary singer and queen of rock and roll Tina Turner has died at 83.
We think often of the Tina Turner performance, which was earth-shaking and changed the way that many people performed on stage. Mick Jagger is very clear about the debt that he owes to her.
That is Billboard's Joe Levy, who had more on her legacy. Turner lived through cancer, kidney disease, and a stroke, but died from an undisclosed long illness. Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis made a big announcement today.
I'm Ron DeSantis, and I'm running for president.
He made that announcement on Twitter, which did have some technical issues, but UCF politics professor Aubrey Jewett says there weren't many surprises.
You say you're running, you hit the incumbent, you talk about what you have been doing and what you would do, and he said, you know, he highlighted all the big conservative issues that he's done here in Florida.
The Arkansas man pictured with his feet on Nancy Pelosi's desk on January 6th has been sentenced to more than 4 years in prison. Here's CBS's Robert Legarry.
Earlier this year, a jury convicted 63-year-old Richard Barnett of numerous charges, including civil disorder and obstructing Congress's work. Prosecutors said Barnett illegally entered Pelosi's office, threatened police, and later bragged about his actions during the breach, arguing he played an important role in the riot.
Barnett later argued he's not proud and he plans to appeal. A group of more than 200 House Democrats have signed on to a discharge petition to vote on a clean debt ceiling increase that would freeze spending at the 2023 level. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
House Democrats have provided a vehicle to end this reckless and dangerous default crisis and avoid the economy crashing.
He says it's a way to find common ground as leaders continue to negotiate. This is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson is pleading with the state Senate committee not to make local leaders go to referendum to raise city and county sales taxes.
County council members are close to the communities they represent and can make informed and timely decisions on behalf of their constituents. A referendum, though, adds a significant element of uncertainty.
The Republican leaders of the Assembly and Senate disagree over the Milwaukee referendum requirement. A police dog in southwest Wisconsin is dead and its former handler is out of a job. Colt was a Monroe County canine officer and died of heat exhaustion after being locked in a hot car last week. Detective Alex Moss has quit the department. In sports, the Brewers blanked Houston last night 6-0. The rubber match is this afternoon. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area.
On Wednesday the 24th, check out the School District of Waukesha's Creative Bar Crawl, which is sponsored by Waukesha's Downtown Business Association. It takes place from 4 till 5:30 p.m. Call 262-349-9063 for more details. On Thursday the 25th, attend the Wine and Live Jazz event from 5:30 till 8:30 at Corvina's Wine Company. Check them out at 6038 West Lincoln Avenue in West Allis. Final Fridays in the Yard, brought to you by the Iron Horse Towers Hotel. Listen to live music with food, drink specials, and a lot of fun. Proceeds go to Children's Wisconsin. The West Dallas Farmers Market is now open on Saturday from 1 till 6 p.m. It offers a wide variety of seasonal produce. 414-302-3276 for more details.
If you have an event you'd like us to share, let me know. Email me, Lindsay Kiner, at info@civicmedia.us.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
RickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So there's a new study out by the good folks over at the Institute for Policy Studies and Jobs for Justice. This is, I think, their third installment. And it got me thinking, you know, when you think about retirement and CEOs, the most outrageous one that I ever remember was Jack Welch, the GE CEO, who... for his entire life, he would get fresh flowers in several homes, had tickets to the Knicks, to the Red Sox, to the Yankees, could be the U.S. Open. He had a list. And the only reason people found out about it is his wife divorced him and wanted half of what he was getting of that. And you found all of these perks, get to use the jet, have an office that they paid for, just all kinds of stuff that they gave this one guy. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars of stuff, while they were literally stealing their workers' pensions. And it really is in this country, it is the two Americas, and retirement security being one of those. That's why I've asked the author of one of the co-authors of the report, A Tale of Two Retirements, Why CEOs Get Bigger Retirement Subsidies Than the Rest of Us. Scott Klinger is a senior equitable development specialist there with Jobs with Justice, jwj.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure, Rick.
So, surprise. The CEOs are lining their pockets while screwing over their workers. Shocked I am. Shocked, I tell you.
Yeah, well, this isn't a new story. This is our third installment of it. The first one was 10 years ago when 100 CEOs got together during a time of concern about the federal deficit, and their idea was to cut Social Security. So there's another old story. They called their thing Fix the Debt, and my co-author Sarah Anderson and I decided we would try to thwart their efforts. Even though they spent $30 million, we were successful. And we did so by pointing out how much these 100 wealthy CEOs, all men, had in their retirement accounts, and it was extraordinary.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the names. Yeah, I'm looking at some of the names on here and some of the outrageous amounts of money that they've put in, tax deferred, and the benefits that they get. And it is just, it's eye-popping when you look at this stuff.
Yeah, so this year we decided to focus on low-wage employers and see what their CEOs had in their tax deferred retirement accounts. Now, there's two different sets of rules, one for ordinary people like us. If we're lucky enough to have a 401k at work, we can contribute $22,500 a year and have that deducted from our income and not pay taxes on it until we cash out in our retirement years. But CEOs have a different set of rules, a different plan, and they have unlimited amounts of deductions. And some of them have quite a lot. The highest one we found was the CEO of a home building company called NVR. They're the makers of the creators of Ryan Homes, and their CEO had $488 million in his tax deferred retirement account, which was enough to give him a $3 million retirement check when he turned 65.
Every month?
Every month, correct. And so we looked at, we tried to look at companies and then compare them to workers. Our most striking story was Walmart, whose CEO has a retirement account large enough that will give him $1 million check a month. He's kind of poor compared to the home builder guy.
Yeah, $169 million he's got.
$169 million, and Walmart told its shareholders that in its proxy statement that gets sent to every shareholder every year. They file a separate report with the Department of Labor talking about their 401k plan, and Walmart has enrolled each and every member of its staff in the 401k plan, including part-timers, which is an admirable thing. To some extent, but they pay their workers so little that 46% of their workforce can't afford to contribute to those plans, and therefore they don't get any of the company match, and they have zero balances. So the boss has $1 million a month coming in retirement. 46% of the workers have nothing and will get zilch other than their Social Security. And their average median wage at Walmart is $27,136 last year. That means half the workers made less than that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said if individual could put $22,000 a year away. $27,000 is what they make there. You know, you're not maxing right. that out. Why? What's the rationale to give CEOs an unlimited, a no cap investment at no tax rate? What's the rationale? I mean, I get why you want. You do it with a 401k. You want people to invest money, especially middle income people, to use as a tax deduction. But I don't understand why the unlimited. That makes no sense to me.
There is no sense to it, and that's one of the things we call into question. And one of our conclusions is they should eliminate this tax loophole for senior executives and make everyone subject to the same rules. It shouldn't matter what your job is. What your job is shouldn't depend on or determine how much you pay in taxes.
I mean, because, I got to tell you, Scott, and I didn't realize that there was this difference. I thought everybody, 401k, it was capped out. I'm over 50, so it's capped out at like 28, 29 grand. That's the most you can put in. I thought that was for everyone. I thought that was just the whole 401k thing. You're blowing my mind that there's someone who makes a lot more money than I do. Can get that tax deferment that I get. It just blows my mind, and I can't understand why that would happen. Now, what do you say to the person who says, well, they're going to pay taxes on that money down the road because I take the deduction now, I put it in the 401k, it comes off my yearly income because I plan on making less money in retirement than I'm making now. So that's kind of the deal. They're going to pay taxes on this money down the road, right?
Not necessarily. So one thing that a lot of CEOs do if they're in a high tax state like New York, California, they will retire to a low tax state like Florida.
Ah.
And where they don't tax income. So they get, first of all, they get all the state taxes they would have paid in New York or California forgiven forever. The other thing that often happens is it goes into their estate. And then when it passes to their children, their heirs, they get a lot of tax breaks, and in many cases can set it up in a way where they don't pay any estate taxes. And when it passes a time of death, the cost basis of it goes, there's any gains on it are wiped out, presumably because estate taxes will be paid. But if you skip the estate taxes, then it just becomes another big win.
Wow. And this should infuriate people, especially, because we know there's a retirement tsunami coming. We know a large percentage of the country has virtually no retirement savings whatsoever. And you know those numbers much better than I do. I'm fortunate. I've got a union gig that we've got a defined benefit pension, and I have the ability to contribute to a 401k. Not every worker is that fortunate. Like I said, a lot of people have nothing and are going to rely on Social Security, which we haven't shored up. And so to hear that we're giving these multimillionaires another tax break to avoid paying taxes is just infuriating.
Yeah. So part of, you mentioned defined benefit plan. That's a pension plan where you get a fixed check every month. when you turn 65. And those used to be far more common than they are today. In 1990, 35% of American workers were fortunate enough to have that kind of a plan. Most of them were unionized. Today, that's down to 12%. So two-thirds less than just 30 years ago. So that's part of it. And one of the reasons companies did that is because when the stock market falls with a defined benefit plan, they're on the hook to make up the losses. Today, the worker's on the hook for those losses. And in fact, last year, when the markets were down, Fidelity Investments said their average 401k dropped in value 20%. So an older worker who's approaching retirement or someone who's in retirement, suddenly saw a lot of their retirement savings evaporate in 2022. The other thing I just wanted to mention is today a new report from Gallup came out, a poll that asked workers their outlook on retirement, and it hit an 11-year low. 88% of lower income Americans say they're worried about having enough money to retire. And in general, only 43%, including more affluent workers, think they'll have a decent retirement. So this is an enormous retirement crisis. Meanwhile, those at the top who were benefiting from cutting, lots of things for workers, including their retirement benefits and boosting their own pay as a result, are looking at very lavish retirements.
So how do we fix this? I mean, as we've said a moment ago, we're heading towards a retirement tsunami. There are a lot of people who, especially my age, who have virtually nothing saved for retirement outside of depending on Social Security. Is there a way to catch up? Is there a way to help fix some of this? I know the report isn't meant to do that, but there's got to be some way forward to help. And I'm sure not giving massive tax breaks to the very wealthy. Again, I'm sure that's not the answer. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, so there's a whole section at the end of the report that has some solutions. One obvious one is to eliminate this tax break for executives and treat everyone the same, regardless of the work they do. But another big one is looking at Social Security. The average, the median Social Security check last month was $1,754. It's not many places in the country where you could live on that if that's all you have. And roughly 40% of Americans, that's mostly all they have when they retire. But yet Social Security is capped. If you make more than $160,000, you only pay the payroll taxes on that first $160,000. For a millionaire, that tax is paid off in February. So at the least, we should raise that cap. And many of us think we should eliminate it altogether. That would generate enormous new money for Social Security, would help strengthen the longevity of the fund, as well as provide more resources for those without other retirement assets to get some expansion in their Social Security.
It's amazing. But I was reading through your study, and you pointed out Nationwide. This one blew my mind. Nationwide, just 35% of working age adults had tax deferred 401k type contribution plans. Another 13% had defined benefits or cash balance plans. Some 42% of Americans age 56 to 64 have zero. Nationwide is one of the companies that don't they do this? Isn't this what they do? And to have so few of their employees in doing this, it seems something wrong there.
Yep. They're an insurance company, and so they do have investments, and it's crazy. One of the companies is Centene, which is the largest Medicaid provider in the country. So they're getting all this taxpayer money to run their business, and then they're larding their CEO with a pension deferred pension account of $328 million. Defense industry is the same way. There's a lot of very large CEO deferred comp plans where their revenues all coming from taxpayers.
Just another example of working people getting screwed again. So let me ask you, Scott, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Scott Klinger, Senior Equitable Development Specialist with Jobs with Justice, jwj.org, their website, if you want to take a look at this report titled A Tale of Two Retirements. We'll get links out on social media. How do we come back to some bit of fairness? Look, I'm a union guy. I think workers joining and forming unions, demanding those defined benefit pensions. But also, sitting across the table from someone like these CEOs that you've pointed out, and pointing out the fact that they've got these kind of things that they're denying their workers, that to me seems the number one reason why you'd want to join a union. Are any of the companies that you looked at unionized?
I don't believe so. It's a good question, and we should have taken a deeper dive in that. I guess some probably have some unions, some of the drug companies, perhaps. But we tended to look at low wage employers, so they wouldn't likely have unions.
So what do we do with this? Now we've got. I hope everyone's as angry as I am. What do we do with this? What's the marching order?
Well, you know, for sure, contact your legislators and ask them to raise the cap on Social Security so that more people can have a raise in their Social Security. You know, we're all clear that $100 million a month pension for a CEO is too much, but I hope we all agree that $1,700 for the average Social Security recipient is too little. And that's the biggest thing we can do to balance. We could close the loophole on CEOs, and that raises a couple billion dollars a year, but it's not, you know, it's not going to solve the problem. It solves the perception problem and the way that CEOs feel that they're somehow special and different from those who make the money for their companies through their work. And I think the reason we did this is exactly what you said, to get people angry, to give workers evidence, you know, that they're getting screwed, to rile them up and hopefully get them to organize.
And get the pitchforks out. But Scott, I appreciate the time. A great report. I'd love to talk to you again as we go down the road. But good stuff, man.
Thanks so much, Rick. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Scott Klinger. He is the Senior Equitable Development Specialist there at Jobs with Justice, jwj.org, the website, if you want to take a look at that. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, it's infuriating to me when you look at the numbers. You look at that, you know, almost half of this country's got nothing save for retirement security, which means that they're hoping and praying Social Security is going to hang around and be there. And you've got a Republican Party hell-bent on destroying it. Now, remember, the idea is we got to destroy it so we can save it. You know, we've got to gut the benefit. We've got to cut it down. We've got to make it farther to down the road to get much more elusive. So people are going to be working into their 70s. Well, they're going to live in this. Look, you know, I know people who do physical manual jobs. They're trying to get through their 50s, let alone through their entire 60s and into their 70s to retire. Look, if your job is pushing paper in an office, maybe you can do that to 70. Maybe you can put up with people's nonsense that long. But there's got to be a pathway to retirement. And this is another one of those things that just infuriates me. That you have, again, the wealth class rigging the game to protect themselves, putting hundreds of millions of dollars in deferred compensation plans. So they're taking the tax break now. And as Scott Klinger pointed out, eventually you manipulate it enough, they might get away with not paying any tax whatsoever. That's what's just mind-blowing. And you look at some of these things that our CEO class has gotten, and this is why I'm such a big supporter of labor unions. sitting across the table from those people saying, you know, hey, we can't afford a nickel an hour raise. You know, we can't afford to help contribute to a pension plan. We can't, you know, make things safer. We can't do all this stuff because we've got to feed our own pot. Sit down across from the table from somebody who does that. Hold them accountable on a certain level. But more importantly, we need to get our heads straight. We need to get our heads straight electorally. Because all of this stuff happened because we kept electing people who were business friendly. This was all by design. The whole move from a defined benefit pension to a 401k was a great sales job. It was a great marketing gig. We're all going to be rich. I remember I was probably 25 when I started working at this particular place. And they said, you stay here 30 years, and you can retire in 30 years with $1 million. And I remember going, well, you know, if that's the case, a loaf of bread is probably going to be $10,000, because they're not going to give a dumb truck driver $1 million. It'll either be worthless or it ain't going to happen. And the reality is they fell about two-thirds short. Because, again, the market knows how to manipulate. The wealth class knows how to borrow from the workers. And there has been a massive redistribution of wealth from working people to the wealthy. And this is just another one of those ways. But they sold us. They sold us the you know, hey, we're all going to be millionaires. Instead of going, you know what, we use a pension system to ensure people can live out their final days with dignity. I look at my grandparents. You know, they had the three-legged stool. They had Social Security as the base. They had their defined benefit union pension as the base, and they had a little bit of savings. They had a solid three-legged stool, and they lived out their years in their home with dignity and respect. How many people are going to be able to do that going forward? As they're destroying Medicare, as they're going after trying to diminish that, the ability for working people to retire is getting much harder. And this should be one of those things that we come together on. This should be one of those things that we take off our red hats and blue hats. This should be one of those things where we're going, you know, we should have a system to ensure that working people aren't getting screwed over. And this is one of my favorite parts of my MAGA friends. Because when I talk to my MAGA friends about this issue, especially this, they're on the wrong side of the track. There's most of them that I know are struggling. They're the ones in the zero and the 10,000, 15,000 in their 401ks. Which is why, and this makes sense now, you know, because there was a statistic that I saw not too long ago that said the average 401k in the country was about $18,000. It makes sense. When 46% of people have zero, and you got a handful of people who've got $300-400 million, kind of makes sense. It's like the Robert Reich bit with, you know, when him, if him and Shaquille O'Neal are in the same room, their average height is about 6 foot because he's a small little guy. It makes sense. So when do we say enough is enough? And when do we start electing people who are going to say, you know what, we do care about your family and the economy. We're not going to hold the country hostage every time we get a bug up our behinds or when we want to get our pound of flesh. But actually a system that encourages the ability of people to be able to retire. Am I surprised that the polling says that people are worried they're never going to retire? No. We've been doing this for 40 years. This is what neoliberalism brought us. This is what supply-side voodoo Reaganomics brought us. This corporate dominance, this swing towards whatever business wants and needs, business gets. And the working people, sorry, better luck next time. So I hope you take a look at the report, A Tale of Two Retirements. And oh, by the way, do yourself a favor. If you really want to get upset, look up Jack Welch's divorce and see what he was getting from GE. all kinds of perks, just obscene kinds of things. The fact that anyone would even ask for that kind of stuff is amazing to me, let alone being able to get it. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. This day in labor history, the year was 1949. That was the day that a shotgun blast broke through a closed window and struck Victor Reuther as he sat reading a newspaper in his living room. Victor, along with his brothers Walter and Roy, were leaders of the United Auto Workers Union, one of the most powerful forces of the 20th century U.S. labor movement. During the 1930s, the three brothers moved to Detroit and became involved in the hard-fought efforts to bring unions to the Motor City. Victor got a job at the Kesley Hayes Wheel Company. He joined UAW Local 174. During the Flint sit-down strike against General Motors, Victor gave speeches to help rally the strikers. According to Mike Smith of Wayne State University, Victor, quote, had this deep resonating voice. He coupled that with a superb control of the language. And when he got up to give a speech, it was usually a beauty. Victor would go on to become the UAW's education director and international director. Roy took up the role of legislative director. Walter became the union's president. Their union leadership made many enemies for the three Reuther brothers. Walter was the victim of a gunshot attack in 1948 that permanently injured one of his arms. The next year, an unknown would-be assassin took aim at Victor. The blast hit Victor in the face. He lost his right eye, and the bullet smashed his jaw and collarbone. In his memoir, Victor wrote that he told the surgeon, quote, "They can take out my eye and take of an arm or a leg, but please fix up my tongue. I've got a living to make." Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
I was standing by gate four when I heard the people roar. They ain't gonna kick the auto workers around. It's that UAW-CIO.
It's an odd marketing strategy for an industry to assail its own customers. Yet, that's what the monopolistic meatpacking industry, led by such huge conglomerates as Tyson, Smithfield, JBS, and Hormel, that control nearly 70% of America's pork market, is doing. Just shut up and eat your bacon, the industry shrieks. The target of their corporate tantrum is the growing grassroots movement of consumers, animal rights advocates, farmers, and others who are dismayed and disgusted by Big Pork's profiteering on animal cruelty. None of your business, shout the executives, lobbyists, lawyers, and far-rent politicians who run the torturous system. But gutsy groups like the Humane Society made their way inside the industry's animal factories, videoing such mass horrors as thousands of pregnant sows locked for 16 weeks at a time in gestation crates so small the animals can't even turn around. In 2018, such exposés prompted 60% of California voters to approve a ballot initiative outlawing the use of these inhumane crates. Adding plutocratic stupidity to their greed, the pork barons then sued the people for overreaching their power. Yes, the pork profiteers actually asserted that democracy, i.e. people power, must not interfere with, quote, sound business practices. Never mind that few of us uncorporatized commoners consider animal suffering to be a sound practice. Even the corporate coddling Supreme Court gagged at the industry's claim that it has the sovereign power to dictate what type of pork chops are available to the public. This month, in an Oddfellow 5-4 decision rendered by two progressive judges and three corporatists, the court ruled that policy choices like these usually belong to the people. Well, yes, and to the animals. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's an example of how grassroots activism matters in important ways. To stay involved, go to humanesociety.org.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, big Supreme Court case coming up, this Moore versus Harper, all on the topic of gerrymandering. And the thing is, You look at some of the more interesting map drawing that they've done across the country. Pennsylvania, my state, right at the very front of it. Fortunately, our Supreme Court shot those down. But in North Carolina, you know, they shot them down. Now, well, they want to go back and say, no, we think we should be able to gerrymander any way we want, which is why I think it's important to talk about this issue, understand what it is, and maybe get behind some marching orders to fight and make things better. That's why I've asked Robert Millman to come talk with us. He's a filmmaker and activist. He's got a film out on this very topic, one that I think folks should take a look at. Check out the website, lineinthestreet.com. Robert, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So let's start with, you know, what is gerrymandering? How do you define this?
Well, let me just go with the term gerrymandering for just a second, because this is something that occurred to me just recently. The term itself, I've decided to try to use the gerrymander math cheat as the way to describe it, because just calling it gerrymandering kind of makes it like a victimless crime, like mistakes were made, like collateral damage. But With the gerrymander math cheat, there are always perpetrators and there are victims. But it's really just a simple math cheat. And in the film I made, which anybody can see at no charge if they go to that site, the opening 2 minutes show a really concise way to show the math cheat. And I invite anybody to look at it. I invite anybody to try it, because it's really very simple. Shall I explain
it? Sure, please, by all means.
If you take 50 dimes and you take 50 pennies and you get a big piece of paper from, you know, Target or Walmart or wherever you get a big piece of paper, and lay it down on your kitchen table and put the pennies and dimes down, you have a representation of a 50-50 electorate. You can mess them around, turn them around any which way. You get two pens, one red, one blue, and then you just start drawing lines. And if those coins are set to represent 10 voting districts, 100 coins, that means 10 coins in each district. You can draw a district that, if you're the pennies and you want to cheat the dimes, you can draw the district so you put 10 dimes in one district and you put 10 dimes in another district. So you've used up 40% of the opposition and given them two districts. Right. You can win the other two, the other eight, I should say. And anybody can try it. It's remarkably consistent. And the thing I've seen a lot is that people that are smart sometimes really don't understand how devastating this simple but abstract math cheat is.
No, you're right. And look, you know, Pennsylvania, the state that I live in, the 1 year Democrats had more, like a 500,000 more voters. And somehow Republicans won 13 of the 18 congressional districts. It's just what you're talking about. They drew the lines in such a way that they packed Democrats into a few districts, and then they spattered them around for the rest.
That exact example is in the film. 50.8% of the votes, 28% of the representation.
So the question then becomes, you know, because, you know, I've said before, I'm not opposed to the idea of gerrymandering if the goal is to have competitive districts. Now, I know that's never going to happen, but, you know, I would like to believe that, you know, we should be talking about ideas and all of that instead of, you know, which one can draw the reddest district or the bluest district, because this doesn't help us. None of this current system helps democracy, helps voters. It doesn't excite voters to go to the polls. So what should we be doing then as opposed to this? Because, look, the Supreme Court case, I fully expect to go the wrong way. I fully expect them to anoint gerrymandering as the wave of the future. Or I guess I should ask you, do you fear the same thing?
Oh, I don't know what SCOTUS is going to do. But I do know that the decision reached by the Pennsylvania court in that 2018 decision was brilliant in its simplicity. And what they said was compact and contiguous, so they have to be, you know, fairly tight, But the real genius of it was they said, do not divide any city, county, town, borough, township, or ward, except where necessary to achieve equality of population. Now, that's the actual language. But what it said is you have to make the fewest cuts to political subdivisions. And that's brilliant in its simplicity because it is completely nonpartisan. And it says just make the fewest splits possible. It's an easily measurable thing. I mean, all this maptitude and gerrymandering software that relies on voluminous personal data that knows 100 data points about your life, they can certainly use the same software to calculate the fewest splits needed. And it was a simple nonpartisan metric. It was resisted mightily by the state legislature, but it ended up working and reflecting the actual state's electorate, and it flipped four votes, made it a 9-9 state instead of a 13-5 state.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, if democracy is the goal and voting matters, you would want competitive districts as opposed to what they keep getting away with. And that's how we end up with such bad legislation. That's how it ends up that working people don't get their needs addressed, and how corporate America seems to always get whatever they wanted. And it's no wonder we end up in the situation we're in.
Well, one of the things that I try to do with the film, and I try to do it every time I speak about it, is try to reduce what is a complex issue. And the people who benefit from it and defend it like to keep it complex because it's a way to change the subject. But it's actually very simple. It's a simple math cheat, and your explicit individual right to vote is written down in plain language in all 50 state constitutions,
right,
along with variations in phrasing, equal treatment. Sorting and selecting your voters to predetermine election results by definition is unequal treatment.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, I think most people want fair. I think they want fairness. Why is it that we allow legislators to do this? I mean, you know, the old phrase of, you know, they're picking their voters instead of their voters picking them. Why do we allow this to happen? You know, I was arguing a while ago. I was going, you know, why don't we just randomly pick a third grade class with a box of crayons and a map? I'm sure they would do a much better job than our legislatures do. What should be the way forward in drawing these maps?
Well, generally, it comes down to two issues, the who and the how. Who draws the maps and how do they draw the maps? A number of states have redistricting commissions. New York State actually has a redistricting commission. Most states that gerrymander don't, and they have rigged state courts, rigged state Supreme Courts. So, you know, to me, the entire point of representative democracy is the idea of having a kind of a judgment of the value of ideas, where everybody gets a way to have not exactly equal. I'm not looking for perfection, but just some basic rules. The way gerrymandering works now, it's like there's a World Series, and one team wins, and after they win, every game after that, they get five outs at bat, and the other team gets three. Now, how do you think that's going to work out? And that really is where we are out. And unless we have some really enforced, simple guidelines, and again, I thought the Pennsylvania Supreme Court was brilliant in its simplicity.
Right. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Robert Millman. Robert's a filmmaker and activist. He's got a film out. You can find that at lineinthestreet.com, lineinthestreet.com. We'll get links out on social media. What made you do this? I mean, you know, I know you're a filmmaker. What made you take this on? Why is this important to you?
Patriotism. I think it's important. I mean, I can't exactly explain it, but I think that I have some gifts. Everybody has some gifts. And you have to pay it forward. You know, you have to do the right thing. I believe in the concept of proportional representation. For God's sake, Article 1 of the United States Constitution says representatives shall be apportioned. I mean, they mentioned proportional representation in the First Amendment, for God's sake. And but, you know, it kind of ran away from us. At first, it was sort of wink and a nod. It'll reset itself. But the fact is, everybody has a cell phone. Everybody has a data trail. And you know what? Amazon knows where your front door is. You know, the detail with which they can sort and select voters is frightening. And there are a number of different guidelines that have been suggested. And certainly, I think independent commissions make sense and get people who are not just fighting for their party, but who, you know, independents as well. And that being the who, but the how, to me, the simplest one is make the fewest splits.
Yeah, no, that's good. What kind of response have you gotten? Because what I love about what you've done is the simplicity. You've got it cut up into nice little bits. It's easy to digest, really easy to understand. What kind of responses have you been getting?
Well, I'm kind of riding a wave right now. Thank you very much for having me on. You know, it's been a long time coming. You know, I started shooting this film in 2017, and I've been wailing on it relentlessly. But I know what winning tastes like. Winning tastes good. And New York State votes on paper ballots because myself and a bunch of other dedicated activists were just relentless about it. And by the same, this was sort of a much smaller notion, but there was a group that wanted to put a power plant next to our school system in the town where I live. And a small group of dedicated activists just were relentless. And relentless wins. So I've been at this for 5 years now, and maybe I'm finally in the right place at the right time.
I hope people will take a look at it and get active in it, because ultimately this is something we should be voting on. This is something that I look at Ohio, and Ohio is an interesting story because they evidently they're not following the rules that their own commissions put out, and they're running on maps that weren't approved, that their Supreme Court threw back to them several times. I mean, it's a mess what's going on in Ohio. And what's frightening to me is that the voters don't seem to really hold the people accountable. I would think that given what happened in Ohio, everybody would throw the bums out because they're clearly not doing their job. But it's sadly come down to this power, red hat, blue hat power struggle that's going on. How do we fix that?
All I know is that relentless wins. And that what you're talking about in Ohio speaks directly to the Moore v. Harper case, which is really just state legislators saying, I don't have to pay any attention to the state constitution. Yeah, I swore to uphold and defend it, but I don't have to. And it's really that simple. And it's almost beyond words to me that the state legislators in North Carolina with Moore v. Harper are asking the Supreme Court of the United States to use the power of judicial review to deny the power of judicial review to state courts that enforce the state constitutions. Yep. And back in 2019, Rucho, the Supreme Court said, well, elections aren't our business, they're state business. So if they're going to turn around and now say it is state business, that's I don't even know where to go with it.
Truly. I don't either, because these are the people who tell us that they believe in states' rights. Most of these people are our 10th Amendment friends who, well, states' rights, arguing that we shouldn't be following state courts, which is weird to me.
Well, I mean, to me, it's Citizens United, made the argument that money is speech. Yeah. And this is about money that is being spent in elections. And in Rucho v. Common Cause, which was the North Carolina gerrymander case of 2019, they said, well, you know, vote suppression, that's just not my business. So voting is speech, yes? Well, maybe not, because money is speech, according to SCOTUS. But as far as voting is concerned, they don't seem to think so. They just said, not my job.
Most certainly going to be interesting to see how this case turns out. But I hope folks will take a look at the movie. We'll get links out. LineInTheStreet.com is the website. I want you to take a look at that. And Robert, I appreciate you taking time for us. Good on you for making this. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again, especially as the Supreme Court case makes its rounds.
Very good. Thank you. And relentless wins.
There you go. I agree. Thank you, Robert Millman. Appreciate the time, filmmaker, activist. LineInTheStreet.com. Check out the website. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1883. The eighth wonder of the world, the Brooklyn Bridge opened for traffic. 600 men worked on the project, which took 14 years to complete. Between 20 and 30 men died working on the bridge. This included the bridge's designer, German-born John A. Roebling. Roebling was visiting the site, taking compass readings, when his foot was accidentally crushed. And although his toes were amputated, he later died of tetanus. Some of the most harrowing work for the project had to be completed under the East River. The bridge's stone towers were to stand on top of caissons. These were wooden boxes with no bottoms that would be filled with concrete. Men known as sand hogs had the job of digging until they hit bedrock to rest the caissons. The underwater boxes were dimly lit by gas lights. If the sand hogs came up too quickly, they risked getting the bends. A 15-year-old Irish immigrant described the work, saying, "When the air was fully compressed, the door of the airlock opened at a touch, and we all went down to work with pick and shovel on the gravelly bottom. My headache soon became acute. The six of us were working naked to the waist in a small iron chamber with a temperature of about 80 degrees Fahrenheit. In 5 minutes, the sweat was pouring from us, and all the while we were standing in icy water that was only kept from rising by the terrific air pressure. No wonder the headaches were blinding." Due to this incredible labor, the bridge finally opened. In the first 24 hours, 150,000 people crossed the new bridge. More than 125 years later, the Brooklyn Bridge still stands as one of the most iconic man-made structures in the U.S. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I love crazy. And today's been kind of a crazy day on some of this stuff. I look at this Candace Taylor. You may remember her. She ran for, I don't remember, governor, senate. She ran for something. She's now been elected as a Republican district chair in Georgia. Evidently, she was on the very unknown Jesus Guns and Babies podcast, because you remember her? She was the Jesus Guns Babies person, of course. But she's on the podcast, and she said, quote, because she's talking about globes. First, I thought, you know, she was talking about, never mind. She says, all the globes everywhere. I turn on the TV. There's globes in the backyard, in the background. Every time there's globes. Everywhere there's globes. You see them all the time. It's constant. My children would be like, Mama, globe, 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 globe. They're everywhere. Globes everywhere. That's what they do to brainwash. For me, if it's not a conspiracy, if it is real, why are you pushing so hard everywhere I go? Every store, you buy a globe. There are globes everywhere. Every movie, TV show, news media. Why? More and more, I'm like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that there are globes. And the only thing that comes up is that she's a flat earther. And I didn't know that these people actually exist. I really didn't. But this woman, evidently there's a globe conspiracy that they have globes all over the place. They're indoctrinating us to believe that the planet is round. And these are people who are running for political office. I mean, this is the scary thing. These are people who want and are seeking power. Power over our children, power over our policy, power over us. And it used to be that someone who said something crazy like this, there used to be a van that would pull up with people all dressed in white with a fancy jacket for them. But no. We give them platforms. And we give them district chairs in the Republican Party. Because this, my friends, this is who the Republican Party is. And I said this the other day. I was on WCPT in Chicago, and I was on Joan Esposito's show, and I was talking about, you know, how I used to have faith in women taking over. I used to go, you know, when women take over, it'll be better because they're more compassionate, more empathetic. They're smarter than men. Go down the list. The qualities are all there for good leadership. I'm now rethinking that based on all of the insanity that I see coming out of all of these Moms for Liberty groups, all of these, what's the Carrie Lake woman who everyone wants to be Trump's VP, this crackpot. It's kind of worrisome that the kid who finished, or didn't, or dropped out, went and got the GED. Because evidently, according to GED math, having a child is cheaper than birth control, which is just frighteningly scary that someone with that lack of insight, intellect, or just common sense is sitting in our Congress. I got to tell you, the silent majority have to speak up. If we're going to save this country from insanity, if we're going to save this country from these kind of folks, we got a lot of work to do. And yet all we focus on is what divides us. Because that's the outrage candy we're throwing. We're literally talking about if the planet is flat again. This is how far back they're taking us. There are people literally who believe the earth is flat. And this is where my mind goes. If it is flat, just keep walking. Hopefully you fall off the edge. And if you don't, you'll come back around the other way. Then you'll know it's not. Finally, every parent's nightmare. I'm not a big fan of Kellyanne Conway. But evidently her daughter, Claudia, is now 18. And yeah, Claudia is doing some Playboy stuff. Evidently, she got a new gig creating what they call salacious content over at Playboy.com. They don't do the magazine anymore. They don't print stuff anymore. So I'm guessing, this is her gig. I hope my daughters don't hate me this much. But wow, sad. Feel sorry for them. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, anything at all, past, present, also in the future, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss an episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.